good evening, and welcome to another episode of Citizen Kane. It's Sunday, September 18th, 2016, and we are streaming live. We stream live every Sunday on Facebook. Of course, if you're watching this on Cheshire TV, keep that in mind when you're watching. I did get a couple of calls during the week. That call-in number, by the way, is 267-521-2771. Call in with your comments and your opinions. Join the conversation. Or you could Skype. The handle is Citizen Kane. Quality is much better, by the way. You can send your messages directly to me if you'd like. The email address is show@citizenkane.org, or you can message me directly on Facebook. And in the studio, the dungeon, it's me, Conan, and joining me
is Shauna again.
The lovely Shauna. Got a couple of people in the chat room. We're down to one person now. By the way, there's a chat room on the Facebook live stream. Kind of hard to navigate. It kind of freezes up. So I'm monitoring it, and you know, I'll try to respond to any comments. But
it's a passive monitoring. I mean, there is the show to do, mm-hmm. and not to be like, oh, we're busy, but might not be able to see it or even get to be able to respond to it. I know I have barely even one track on my mind, so if I can do two things at once, that'd be
well. And on past episodes, we actually didn't place it in the right location, so it kind of got covered, and I think it's in a good spot, but I just refreshed it, and there were some comments that, you know, I didn't know that they were there. But let's get on with this show. I wanted to talk about something that went down this week here in Keene. Some of you, if you're property owners and taxpayers, probably got one of these in the mail this week. Apparently, Keene is doing its 2016 reevaluation. It's been about 6 or 7 years since the last one. What happens is the equalization ratio gets out of whack. It can't go 10% below or over the market value.
So I've never gotten this, but I've always been a renter. So this is a letter to homeowners.
If you don't own property, you're not going to get it. Whoever you're renting from is getting this and taking care of it. And so, yeah, that's a good point, by the way. A lot of renters just don't know what's actually going on. They complain about
the rent going up, and it's like, why is rent so expensive?
Yeah, they just don't
know. There's a lot of factors.
There's a lot of factors involved. We do have a phone call, and I'm going to go straight to it. Caller, go ahead with your thoughts.
Hey, Conan, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine. Is this Dave?
Yeah, it's Ridley.
How you doing, man?
Hey.
What's on your mind?
Good. Well, are you guys talking about the property tax reevaluation?
Yeah, they do this every now and then. All cities and towns across the country do this. You know, after a while, the market values or what their assessed values get skewed from the market values. And so they've got to go through and reevaluate. And sometimes it's good, especially if your house has been going down, because now you're going to pay less. Or in some situations like my own, I got hit pretty bad. My property value went up 16%. So that means this year I'm going to be working a couple of extra weeks this year just to pay for the extra tax, and I'm not happy about it.
So, Dave, did you get this letter, or did you hear from your landlord or whoever, your neighbors got one, or?
I didn't. Were you asking Conan or me?
Dave. You.
I think Dave rents, yeah. So he's not going to see this.
No, I've heard about this as soon as it came in. Believe me, I had to hear about it.
Yeah, I will not own a home until it is allowed. Home ownership is not currently allowed in the United States.
This is correct. It you might spend 30 years of your life paying for your house, and figure when you send in that last mortgage check that you're in the clear. But sorry, bro. It's never over. The city and your neighbors and the powers that be own your home. And if you decide that you want to maybe not send in that tax check in, they're going to start sending you letters, and then they're going to start sending people in uniforms and, you know, 3 years, you're going to be getting your butt thrown out of your house that you thought you own and you really
and it's
don't.
It's all to fund things they don't need, like a city manager. I mean, how many towns in New Hampshire actually have a city manager? It's so unnecessary that I think I can only name three.
I think when the bureaucracy gets so big, you know, you've got so many department heads. They really do want like a chief, a head chief to lead them all. And it's someone with a vision. And I, you know, you're right. It is unnecessary. But I mean, this is what happens when they get top heavy. It's just, and you know what? People, it makes people feel better. You have so many followers out there, and they want somebody telling them what to do, how to live their lives. And it's really sad that, you know, that people are in that state of mind. I happen to consider myself an individual, and I have my own ideas, and I think I know what's best for me, and I don't need somebody, whether they be in Concord or whether they be here in Keene at the City Hall or whether they be in the White House. I don't need these people making decisions on my behalf.
And do they really need, one of the things they use the money for is like what they just did at Railroad Square. It's so important to go investigate these people who had a liquid that might be alcohol in their containers.
I don't understand. What happened at Railroad Square?
There was a guy named Bob Call who, I guess, had some sort of civil disobedience over the last day or two where he announced that he was going to have some sort of like an open container protest.
Like,
and,
even protest of open alcohol container
laws? Yeah, protest of the open container laws.
Why?
So I guess he showed up at Railroad Square with containers that might or might not have beer in them, and the police came and investigated, and they decided there wasn't beer. But then they decided, oh well, he's got a table, so that's illegal, and you got to move that. We won't arrest you right now. But you know, I mean, just how important is that?
That's a pretty good question. I wonder how important is it to protest open container laws.
It's an easy one.
No, I don't think. I don't think it's the most important thing to protest. But why am I having to pay the police to investigate something? I mean, I don't care if the guy's got an open container. So I don't want the police using my money to investigate him.
You know,
that's what they think they need the money for.
Yeah, you know what's really sad is if you watch city council meetings, you know, there is, I would say, 10-15% of what they do is approve liquor licenses every year. They got the restaurants have to come and, you know, every year, and they have to petition you know, the city planners and get, you know, to get permission to sell alcohol in their establishments.
To renew their license. It's a yearly license.
Right. And there are rules, there's silly rules, like you can't leave the table that you're at and walk across the street to another restaurant. So the bar hopping is, you know, this is, they're always cracking down on the college kids, and they're always looking for underage collegers who basically walk across the street with a bottle in their hand.
Well, if you're underage, it's not like you don't know that you're underage, though. If I'm 19 years old, I know how old I am. I know that the legal drinking age is 21.
Right.
So, I mean it's never really been like a good, you know, a good case to fight for, a really, you know, viable hill to die on.
You're right.
And I never understand the open container protests because it's like I've never seen a good case of somebody really getting, you know, oppressed because, I mean, I've walked downtown with an open water bottle and I've never been oppressed. I didn't act like I was drunk. I didn't bring attention to myself as, you know, hey, cops, come get me.
I think the point of the protest is to make it known that it's a silly law.
It really just looks silly. I mean, nobody.
But I mean, you keep in mind, this is, so Railroad Square today, was yesterday?
It was yesterday.
So right across the street and in the center of city, the center of Keene, you have all of the anti-war protesters. They're also protesting. I mean,
yeah.
So are they any more right or wrong than the guys who are protesting open alcohol?
I think there's a quality in the difference between what they're protesting.
I would say both are probably not getting a whole lot done because I think people see both of those parties and they just shake their heads and keep on going on with their lives because it's meaningless.
Well, the biggest difference is the difference between zero and one. If there's zero resistance, that's a big difference from one, level one resistance. At least you made that step that took it from nothing to something.
as long as it doesn't burn, as long as they don't get burned for it. And yes, it's right. I mean, if more and more people see this type of activism, whether it be anti-war activism or, you know, going up against silly ordinances, hopefully it does. Hopefully it does wake some people up. But I kind of lean with Shauna on this one, in that what it does is it just pisses off the norms. The norms see this. The normal taxpayers who just want to go on with their lives, they see stuff like stunts like this, and it just, and it burns them. And they're like, they don't want to have anything to do with it. They the next thing you know, you're reading about them in the local hate groups, and it they feed off of this. So I don't know that it's actually accomplishing anything.
Well, no, all the same stuff happened to Gandhi. I know it was bigger issues that Gandhi was dealing with. But yeah.
There were really pretty bigger different issues than what Gandhi. I mean, there's a huge difference between I need to do something to get attention and generate content so that people pay attention to me. And, well, I could pretend to drink like those people did a few years ago. They're not here now because something about Keen, people leave after a couple of years, if at best, and what Gandhi was doing. Not even taking into account the public opinions of Gandhi versus the public opinions of free Keeners. Those, even in themselves.
Well, Gandhi was hated. Gandhi was hated in South Africa by the Afrikaners to a large extent. That was just because, you know, he was providing resistance. That wasn't because he was wrong. And it could be the same thing with these guys. I don't think the issue is as important.
Well, I think
still a victimless.
It is still a victimless crime in and of itself in a vacuum, but society doesn't exist in a vacuum. Unfortunately, libertarians and Keen don't exist in a vacuum either. And I mean, I always look back to before Rosa Parks, there was another woman, I don't remember her name, who had the same thing. She didn't give up her bus, her seat on the bus, and she got arrested. They deliberately did not use her case because she was a single mom, which actually mattered back then, and she just did not present a good face. And, you know, I'm not saying, hey, if you look like a good person, people will care about you, but there's plenty of time to plan and create a better case. And I don't know who the Open Container arrestees are who actually should not, who have like a really good case. I don't see any case law or case incidences. I don't see anybody, you know, hey, I was arrested for Open Container, but it was just water. This is total oppression. I need help. I got to do something about it. And, you know, I mean, as well, oh, I'm not paying for the cops to do that. I don't want cops bothering, you know, boring libertarians with nothing else to do all day either. But they're individual, sovereign individuals with their own agency. And it's like, well, kind of, you know, mitigate your risk. You know, I don't want to say like they brought it on themselves, but I mean, nothing happened. They weren't arrested. You know, the guy was told, hey, you got to have a permit. And then they all left. So, you know, I don't know what people really expected to come from it other than what's always happened, which is tragedy. So,
yeah, I would say that because there are a lot of people, a lot of activists do come here to Keene and they try out their stunts and they last a few months and they leave. And, you know,
because stunts aren't employable.
And the people who live here have to put up with the fallout. I've always said, you know,
they're responsible for what they do, though. They're not responsible for the way people react, especially people who are against them.
They are responsible for the way they act, right? And when I'm at like a previous job and somebody knows that, you know, why did you move all the way out here so recently? And I explain, you know, I'm technically a free stater. And then I am suddenly to these people, the face of the free staters in Keene or those weirdos down the street in Keene that the cops want to bulldoze down or whatever they tell me. So I'm not responsible for what they do. And I could say like, oh, yeah, you know, go yell at Ian about that. That's his problem. I'm not Ian. Well, yeah, clearly I'm not Ian, and they know that. But it does end up being something that I kind of can choose to deal with. I mean, I have at times written some stunts off completely and been like, I don't know anything about it. I think it's stupid. I think it's a lot stupider than you think it is, the normal person I'm talking to. I think it's a lot stupider than you think it is because, you know, it's actually infuriating. And they, you know, are just like, oh, what's going on with this? Yeah. So you know, I, as a stakeholder who does live in Keene and understands the libertarian positions and understands the Free Keeners' ideals, you know, I feel like I do have a stake in what they do, in, you know, in how destructive they are to the communities, the larger Keene community psyche of their perception. And that becomes
I don't know.
But, you know, and I do understand, at the same... Go on.
Unless I'm missing something, I'm not seeing anything destructive here, and except for the reaction on the part of people who have a concern about
I think
people harmed.
The general destructive, like, well, you know, instead of getting a job or building roots in the community and, you know, honing down. And that, you know, I know that comes down to preferences of, like, what I think being a Free Stater in Keene entails, or in Manch, or wherever I would live. I understand that. But I mean, the other people who do other activism that I think is destructive or is not conducive even to themselves, their own well-being. I mean, obviously, yeah, it's just my opinion.
All right, question for you, Shauna. Is there any type of activism towards gaining more liberty and freedom in our lives that you can embrace, that you are all right with, okay with?
Nothing that is just simply to generate content.
I mean, what about running for office, or, you know, petitioning, writing letters to the editor, petitioning your legislators to get, you know, more liberty-friendly legislation passed? That's going to rock boats, by the way. All three of those things will rock boats
Depends on how you do it, I'm sure. I think generally, because my activism so far has been zero content, so it doesn't matter, and I should just shut up all the time. I know, I understand that. I'm not saying that you're saying that or that Dave's saying that, but I know the gig. So my general idea of what good activism or good way to conduct the Free State Project is to, it's really boring. It involves being a good neighbor. It involves, you know, being as self-sufficient as you can and being available to help your neighbors, help, you know, people that you think are deserving of your help and your charity, and encourage them to do well and to build stable, large families.
Dave, what do you
think? And that's really boring. I'm sorry.
What's the best way to gain freedom and liberty in our lifetimes?
Well, there was this sales guy I used to work with who said that the number one key to success in sales is a large amount of activity. He didn't specify what kind of activity it was, just activity. Now, yes, there's such a thing.
He was selling it.
There's such a thing as bad activity. But by and large, it's just being as active as possible. That's where the word activist comes from. I tend to find these kinds of things that are not boring to be more interesting, and everyone else feels the same way.
I agree, but I tell you what, this one did seem kind of like, it did feel like a stunt to me. I don't feel their hearts were in it. I think they were just trying to get some, they're definitely trying to get publicity. That's a given. But I didn't feel that this one was, I didn't even look into it. It wasn't something that interested me. Especially when I figured it out only lasted a couple of minutes. But I know the Union wrote an article about it, and the Union leader, and I think the Sentinel wrote an article about it. So they definitely got someone's attention.
They probably are newbies to this sort of thing. Maybe, I don't know if they're college students or whatnot. But, you know, people aren't going to do perfect things all the time. The important thing is that they're not making you pay for their activity, and they're at least pushing back against those who are without hurting anybody. And that's the important stuff. They got that part right.
Yep, and it's a free country, so they've got that going.
Wait. A libertarian said it's a free country?
They got that going for them.
Wait.
Currently.
Who are you?
At the moment. Dave, was there anything else on your mind you wanted to talk about?
No, that was it.
You talked about the one story that Shauna did not want to discuss at all.
Actually, that was the one story I did want to discuss, and that's pretty much. Dave, you did it for me.
But I'm glad you called in and talked about it, because I think we got a lot out of Shauna, a lot of her deep insights.
Without cussing.
She said she was a stakeholder.
Heard you say it once, Shauna.
She said she was a stakeholder. Dave, thanks very much for calling in, man.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. So...
One thing that Dave did say, he said city managers. All I've seen from city managers in the city of Keene, all he does in meetings, and I'm not waiting till, you know, Dave's gone just to be like, yeah, now what I really think. But city managers at meetings, what I've seen him do, or maybe it's the city attorney or somebody else, but he sits to the side and the counselors and committee members are discussing what they want to do. And then they ask the city manager, mm-hmm. who says, no, that's illegal. No, that's very illegal.
Well, a lot of times they look to him because they don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. So
it's like, can we do this?
And by the way, why not make him king? I mean, I at least would be like, you know, he's the guy who knows everything.
Well, actually, there are people in this community who would rather do away with city council and just have a city manager and a mayor. There are people who want to get away, would like to do away with the voting system at the school level, where we all vote on these articles every year. They would like it to be like the city is set up, where you have council members who make all the decisions, and the voters are just out of luck, and they can decide to vote for them for that different person in 2 years.
Well, if everybody's just looking at the one guy who knows what's going on,
but it's not just the city manager; it's also the lawyer, town lawyer.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the mayor is sitting off to the side.
It's the gallery, so you the got gallery those, of knowledge.
You've got those three guys, and they have a plan. They know what they know.
So really that's all that I've seen that money go towards, the money that pays for a city manager. What do? It's like he's part of the council of elders because the city councilors, I don't know what they would do if they got to do whatever they...
I think there are a couple who know what's up and they're able to, you know, to hold their own.
So every year... homes get reevaluated, or
now you can go and have your home reevaluated. You have to take it to the reevaluation process, which happens every year. You have that opportunity, and if you don't like the results that they give back to you, of course you have to fight for it. You have to tell them why you think your home is either more or less. I don't know why you would say that it's more.
Maybe you're trying to sell it.
If you don't like those results, you can actually appeal to. The New Hampshire appeal through the New Hampshire appeal process in Concord.
You've done that.
This year it's different. They did the entire city, and they have to do this because the numbers get messed up.
How do the numbers get messed up?
Property values go up and go down. So if every, you know.
So like the house down the street, they might go get a tree fall on the roof and they never fix it. And then the property value goes way down.
Actually, the entire neighborhood's going to go, it's going to either start turning into a dump,
okay.
And the values would go down, Church Street, or in some neighborhoods, the values are, you know, they're actually going up because guess what? People are investing in their homes. And that is the absolute worst part about this process. You're punished for, you know, when I first moved into this house 4 years ago, the wood line came all the way up to the house. And I've been steadily, you know, working on the yard and pushing it out and working on the house. And then I get this reevaluation this year, and my property went up 16%.
Do you think it was
I call around and I'm asking people, they're like, oh, yeah, my property went down 5%. My property went down 10%. And here I am in the middle.
Like a schmuck.
Oh, my God. And so, and here's the worst part about it. I called the city appraisers to ask some questions, especially concerning whether the ultimate value, the total value of Keene went down.
You since like the average?
Since 2007, the average of Keene has been going down slowly. Now, what happens is because, you know, city is growing and the school is growing every year, the tax rate's going up, but when all the values go down, that means the cities actually takes in less money from the same tax rate, so they have to increase the tax rate. So yeah, you might be paying, you might act, your house might be valued at 10% less this year, but the tax rate went up. So guess what? You're still paying the same as you did last year.
Unless so the rate itself will go up.
The rate's going to go up. Your value went down. You're still going to pay the same.
And if the value of your home goes up again in a couple of years, you're still poked over with that higher tax rate.
Well, in my situation, it's a double whammy. Not only did my value go up, but the tax rate's going to go up. So I'm going to get hit twice.
Yikes.
And I've been sick to my stomach all year, not all year, all week, thinking about that. By the way, I got this letter on Tuesday, right after the when the election results were coming in. Got my butt handed me, by the way. But that's what I get. I knew it was going to happen. Running as a Democrat against the Democratic incumbent. I had intended to run as a Republican. I think I mentioned before, as a Libertarian, you know, I wake up on one side and I'm a Democrat. I wake up on the other side of the bed and I'm a Republican. It doesn't matter.
I think that's.
But I mean, I wanted to give people an option, and I think that the Republicans didn't have an option
The Republicans didn't have an option. It was right in. I somehow got a Republican ballot. I know exactly why I did, but somehow I did. And yeah, there was nobody. I think if there's already a Democrat on the ticket and they recognize it, or they just see, okay, that's the name, well, then I'll just put that one in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's the problem with libertarians when they actually are independents, because you are an independent. Try as I might, you're an independent.
Right, and third party, even though independents.
So, I mean, there really are things about both parties that you can go with, you can't go with, but really it depends on the actual situation, the actual issue, whether what you say as independent and consistent logically and all that, not in the left-right spectrum, which is real, but you're not in it, you know, whether that gets interpreted as Republicans and Democrats, as Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the worst part about all this is that the independents outnumber, they're the biggest party.
I think the signaling that comes from saying I'm a Democrat and the signaling that comes from I'm a Republican is just too much for people to bear. Like, I wouldn't want to call myself a Republican. That means I'm mean and racist. Oh, I wouldn't want to call myself a Democrat. That means I'm, you know, feminist and
there's
whatever. Like, I don't know.
There's definitely that to consider, that the parties are losing favor.
All right. So you got the letter that says, hey, you know, you're property's been evaluated for more. So why do people buy? Because when I was a kid, I thought, you know, I lived in rentals pretty much all my life, certainly as a little kid. And I always thought, man, if you owned a house, that meant you owned the house. You owned the place where you live. So it was yours. You don't pay rent. And even in the Sunday comics, they'd have little magazines for kids where they feed you the propaganda. And one of them was about buying a home, and it explained what a mortgage was to, you know, 7-8-year-olds. And I got the impression that, okay, the mortgage is you paying for the house really slowly, but once you pay it, it's your home. So why do people buy a home at all?
Well, it's
like,
cheaper.
What is cheaper than renting all your life?
For me.
Okay.
For me, owning this home. And as Dave mentioned earlier, we don't really own our homes.
To the extent that you do, yeah.
Being here and paying a lease to the government to be in this home, I pay less than I would if I was renting. And I have a much bigger property to run around in versus, you know, someone paying the same amount, but maybe they live downtown for a little studio. They don't have any yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe one or two bedrooms. And they don't really own it in 15, 30 years. So no, I'm paying a lot less than someone who would be renting for this exact same property.
Okay, I never understood that, and especially after seeing this letter and the evaluation and reading that opinion piece that you have, I'm just like, why would anybody buy it? Because I ain't got no dowry.
Well,
so.
The reasons that you wouldn't want to buy is if you didn't plan on living here for a certain amount of time. If you're going to be here for a couple of years, yeah, don't buy. If you don't want to maintain your property, don't buy. If it's too big for you. But I mean, but to think that renting, you're not paying property tax is, and I hear this from so many people.
I never had that idea.
It brings a tear to my every time. If you live in Keene, you're paying property tax in one shape or form. If you just mm-hmm. drive through Keene and shop at the convenience store, you are participating in the tax scheme because you're paying the shop owner who has to pay property tax on his building, on his building. And so the drink that you just bought, yes, the taxes, it's trickling down to that drink.
So every dollar you spend is like a vote in favor of the system.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think you want me to skip this?
Well, I think you should, we'll link to it. If he doesn't, I will.
Or I'll just take care of it another
It's
episode.
Pretty good, straight to the point, almost Max Kaiser in the intensity.
Yeah,
of
just,
the righteousness.
It just really, it's a nice little short article that really talks about the idea that you don't own your house. And it doesn't go into other things that you don't own. For example, you don't own your car because you're forced to pay registration on it. Depending on where you live, how much income tax, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare you pay, you don't own your job. You don't own your own production because because of this scheme called taxes.
26%.
And by the way, I am not people ask me, how could we possibly survive without a tax system? Well, you know, I'm not against user fees. You know, I support you paying for what you use. If you enroll your four kids in the local school, I'm sorry, you need to pay for that. Or have, and if you have a problem paying for four kids, maybe you should have less kids.
Kill one, or what are you talking about?
Have less kids.
Oh, in the first place, I wouldn't be able to afford them. Well,
and
I think there'd be plenty of people who, in that case, of like, oh, you know, I'm enrolling my kids in the school, and you know, there'd be like a collection plate at the beginning of the year to pay for the kids who can't afford it, or whatever, or not get them netbooks every year.
Think of how much money would be kept at the end of the year if we didn't have to pay the property taxes that we're forced to pay. You'd have lots and lots of individuals who are left with, at the end of the year, with more money than they can spend.
Yep.
They're going to do something with it. They might spend it.
They'll be paying for
their
kids'
school. It, but they're going to be spending it. They're going to be putting it back into the community. Or they might say, hey, look, I'm going to start a scholarship for the kids. I'm thinking of the guy who, these, it's the size of an ant. Zoolander. So yeah, you can start a scholarship for underprivileged kids who need help or they can't afford to buy lunches. I mean,
and there are people who do that right now.
We live in the most charitable country in the world, and that's really going away. Every time we as people and use our government to create a new entitlement, that we become less charitable because we expect at the end of the day it's going to be taken care of. Why give money to the needy? There's already a program. We just lobbied our government last year to create that program. A prime example is the soup kitchen here in Keene.
The community kitchen.
I wasn't aware of how much money they're getting from the city. I think in a couple of years they're going to be almost, oh, I'm sorry, it's either they're going to be at a third or a half. I think it's a half of their budget is going to be city funded.
Wow.
And it's like, hold on now, wait a minute.
There are jars.
That's not a charity.
They have jars at almost every convenience store and store in Keene. It says, you know, a jar and to the community kitchen.
And by the way,
and there's a ton that go to other things like, oh, you know, this kid fell on her head and needs a helmet or whatever, you know, and people put money in those too. So,
by the way, those organizations work best. When you start getting government involved, the bureaucracy moves in, and before you know it, two-thirds of the incoming revenue is going to pay the bureaucracy, and only a third is actually going to pay the needy.
Yeah.
This is fact. And charities, on the other hand, they know who needs the charity, for one thing. They know who needs help. They know how to do it a lot of the times, and they know how to do it, and they know how to crunch. They know how to crunch pennies. Because it's important to them, because every penny counts. But when government's paying for it, hey.
Well, I think when government's paying for it and when the size is too big. Like, if it's a small, you know, two-people operation working out of their home, they can, you know, legal issues aside, they could say, like, no, you don't, you need to get your effing act together or whatever. And not just, you know, a big, no government, but still a massively big conglomerate of charity. I think those don't really work so well either. They work pretty well, but they're not effective.
And before you know it, money starts falling into crevices that you didn't know existed. And, you know, there's no, you start to lose transparency. You start to lose a face. You know, the best thing about charities is when you actually know who you're giving the money to. You are the charity, the help to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that connection between the giver and the receiver. There's a connection that is so important. They've done studies. It makes you feel It makes psychologically, it makes you feel good about yourself when you give and you help people. And if you're the receiver, it makes you feel good to know the person who gave to you. But when you can't see the face, and it's just a an EBT card that, well, that you think you're entitled to.
I would say that I've seen the faces on both sides. I've had a job that donated a lot of money, a lot of money, to a very big, very well-known charity, and I watched the giving them the big old check ceremony, and I didn't feel anything. I was like, well, can I go now? I want to go back to work, ironically. And, you know, it didn't feel like anything.
You don't like poor people.
No, I've been the poor person who's received charity. I've been to the church food pantries and received them and all that. I've been helped as a kid, certainly when I did not deserve it. And, you know, there was that connection. And I've been able to help some people who I don't know if they deserved it or not. That's between that person and God. But between me and God, I'm all set in that regard. So, and I think with charity, it's understandable why it's the most giving nation in the world and all that, and yet we aren't, and it's going away, because with all the taxes that are going to charities, that are going to social service safety nets and everything that 120 years ago would have been charity, you know, people can't afford it, and they really do genuinely believe that government is charity, is a source of a lot of charity, you know, and they just don't hash it down because they got other stuff to do, and it's really taking advantage of that.
Yeah. Wake up call to everyone listening. If the money is taken from you, it doesn't matter if you're curing cancer. It doesn't matter if you're helping the needy, putting people through school,
or curing Zika.
If the money is stolen from you in order to pay for those things, it is never charity. It is always theft. It's always a crime. And why is it a crime? Everyone knows it's a crime if I was to take $100 from Shauna here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's okay if I lobby my local government to take $100 from her.
To go to the Conan Needs New Shoes. Glasses fund.
I wouldn't be getting $100 glasses. I'd be getting from Zinni.com or whatever it is. China glasses. So... yeah, be careful when you call things charity when you call them entitlements, because there's a huge, huge difference. We've been talking, I guess, what episode are we on? We're on four?
Four.
We've been talking, of course, of how Keen makes it difficult for people to get things done, especially when it comes to businesses. Some businesses just, they put up with it and they fight through it and they spend a lot of money, you know, following all the rules and ordinances and regulations. And every now and then you hear about some group that just couldn't make it.
And at the same time, the city of Keene also wonders why and racks their brains why young people aren't moving in. Why the city on average is getting older and older, and why they're, you know, what kind of welfare, what kind of social services do we need to offer these young people to move here and stay here?
Oh, we need to give them free college.
We need to give them free college. We need to be more at the mercy of the academic industrial complex.
By the way, if you listen to pretty much every one of the Democratic senators brought up the idea to offer a program where if you stay in Keene,
Collegers
stay in Keene, I think they get their, is it a reduction in their tuition, or they actually...
It's a massive reduction in tuition. I know if you, at least when I graduated from college, if you go into teaching in inner cities,
or go get a job working for the government.
No, within the inner cities, that's particularly the government jobs that they want. Your student debt goes down. Not very much, but more than what people are putting in themselves.
By the way, there are health departments that do the same thing in certain situations where they have a hard time enrolling certain people. They say, hey, look, yeah, you come work for us for 2 years and we'll pay off this much of your debt. Make it 5 years and we'll make it worth your while. But also, by the way, government does the same.
Right.
Be a city clerk for 3 years and we'll pay down your debt.
Oh.
And by the way, military also does the same.
Isn't that what the GI Bill is?
Well, you also have situations where you can go in with debt and have your debt paid down.
What's the phone number for this place?
No, you're not going in the military. So we were talking about how hard it is for some individuals. This is actually interesting because this was a building, a downtown building that I was interested in, and it got scooped up really quick. I thought it had a nice price tag on it.
And this is
and
in
I'm
the kinda
glad I'm kind of glad I didn't, because these guys have been racking their brains trying to get this application, this zoning application passed for a new restaurant, and they finally gave up.
So it's a 25-year-old from Winchester and a 25-year-old from Westmoreland, which when I was reading this Friday in the Sentinel, blew me away. Like, there's kids 25 years old who have the money to open a restaurant. Daddy's money, their money, I don't even care, man. It's like, dude, get young people into Keene to create. I'm very familiar with at least the fast food restaurant industry, so I'm, you know, all on board. This is great. Oh, they withdrew their application to the city for an 80-seat restaurant that would cater to college-age adults, which I don't like, but if they're spending money, I do like them, living in the three nearby off-campus student housing complexes. This location is within walking distance from the college itself and I think all of the dorms. It's on the same street, at least two of them.
It's right across the street from the cafeteria. It's in the shadow of a brand new dorms they just put up.
You could fall out of the window of one of those dorms
and land in this building.
They don't, honestly, it says here, the city says it's about parking. The restaurant next to them, the pub restaurant, says, oh, it's totally only about parking. The parking, I don't think, would be an issue. The issue that I see about parking is that it's in an area that is zoned so that if it's a restaurant, it has to have one parking spot for four chairs.
Which it doesn't.
The nature of what they're doing, what they were doing, and, you know, they decided not to, so, you know, good on them. Probably the smart money is to not come here in the first place, apparently.
Except guess what? Now there's an empty building there, and this still doesn't have anything in it.
Which the owner keeps saying, we still want to have a restaurant there. It doesn't sound like you can get a restaurant here, dude. Sorry. But
the worst part about this is, so I actually checked out the October meeting. This has been going on for, they say, 2 years. I thought it was only 1 year because the last big meeting was October 2015. And then the lawyer for the restaurant next door, the pub,
which is nice food. I went there once. It was
as well
good.
As the fabric store and some realtors down the way. They all came out. They petitioned or they appealed the process. So anyways, so these people put forth an application to have this done. The zoning manager said in a letter, it's okay. It's good. They're good to go. Let them do it. Of course, all these people showed up at the public hearing and they're like, we're going to appeal this. And of course, 4 or 5 months later, they appealed it and they won the appeal. Because these guys, on the grounds that they didn't have enough parking for an establishment that doesn't need parking.
It would need parking. I think it would. I mean, you have people driving in and you got to park somewhere. I think it'd be very easy to get around it by just saying, no, there is no parking. Park somewhere else. Pay for parking down the street. Mm-hmm. It's in walking distance of everything. Or it's catering to the college students. What's across the street from the college? From the restaurant that's across the street from the college? The college.
Okay, well,
get a variance from the college to allow, you know, have little stamp or whatever, parking validation, so that people who are going to that restaurant can park there. That might not work either, but it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. I mean, they could change the zoning and just get it. They could do it anyways. The zoning board could say, well, we'll just give them a variance.
Well, here's the,
they do that all the time.
Here are the problems. After the March appeal, they were going to look for other parking spots. And now it's August. So whatever happened in between then, I guess they figured out they couldn't find any more spots.
Yeah, they felt they were spinning their tires and getting nowhere.
But here's the worst part about it. It's all the abutters that came out and fought this, especially the pub.
The abutters. People around them.
People around them.
Okay.
So you got the college was coming out saying, we don't want another bar. This is a bad situation. The pub's coming out saying it's a parking problem. And so put a sign on your parking lot. You know, what's the deal? I don't think it has any, I don't, as far as the pub is concerned, I don't think it has anything to do with parking. I think it has to do with competition. And they
I think it would. I mean, I don't know their lunch menu, how friendly it is to students, how late they're
serve,
open.
They serve alcohol, right?
Yeah, but they kind of, from my impression of going there, and I've gone there, now that I remember, I've gone there three times, it seems like you are going to the pub. The pub is not going to you. So when you go in there, it's their rules and it's their vibe. And that's totally fine. I liked it. It's, you know, not anything I got anywhere else. So I can't really complain.
By the way, I got two coupons to them. Maybe I should, maybe we should use them up real quick before this show gets out.
Yeah.
Pub, I don't hate you, but I don't, but I love competition. And I think that if this was about competition, you were in the wrong.
Well, they do say that it's not about competition. They do have the other abutters, the people of New England Fabrics, which is down the street on Ralston from them, said that, you know, the being close to the college and within walking distance, which would eliminate parking for a lot of it, would make the new restaurant attractive for students, quote, and potentially cause an increase in what they described as already troublesome behavior in the neighborhood. Well, the city kind of is prostrate to the college in terms of the economy. So much of the service economy, how are there, you know, five or six nail salons in Keene? How come there's, I think, two tanning salons in Keene because of the college?
By the way,
if you don't want college behavior, which is not going to get better in this society, then don't cater to them and then complain and be like, oh, we can't cater to these children. You are catering to the children. So much of the economy, so much of the scheduling in downtown Keene jobs is very in tune with when the collegers come back. So it's like the whole city is created under the impression that the college will be here forever and will always be seen as a good thing. I can't wait until college is not for everybody again.
Have you been to this thing yet, Aroma Joe's Coffee?
If I ever did go, I wouldn't tell you because it probably costs money.
This just opened up and looks like they scooped up about four parking spots. They put a gazebo thing? A patio? And immediately ate up four nice parking spots because guess what? They don't really need it because they're catering to the students who walk there. And so now their shop, Talon's restaurant, would have gone to the left of this if you're watching on the television. I think it would have worked. I think it would have worked nicely. And this is very sad that this has gone down. Like you said, you brought up their ages. You got two young guys who have new, fresh ideas, and they've been dashed. They've been shattered.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're special little snowflakes and all that. So I mean, they'll go somewhere else. They'll do fine somewhere, and I've seen a couple of places cycle through that area. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how well, I guess it depends on how well they could survive the summer without the college brats and everything. But it just seems like the issue was like they couldn't even get started. And it was about parking. And also the fact that nobody wants to cater to the students. Well, you are catering to the students unless you shut down Keene State. You know, and make my day.
Speaking
which I don't think anyone's gonna be doing.
Speaking of colleges, so we have four big colleges here in New Hampshire, and one of them's Keene State here in Keene, and of course, you've got another one in. I forgot already.
Wherever it is.
UNH University of New Hampshire is at Durham.
Durham.
So, a lot of times when you're listening to the locals, the local progressives, they are always harping on the fact that New Hampshire, as far as higher education funding, we are the last on the list. I mean, dead last.
You
so
like federal funds or like the state?
State to higher education. So I looked at the budget, and sure enough, we give 2.5% of the entire state budget to higher education.
I honestly, a subscription to JSTOR and the William and Mary Quarterly is not that much. So what do they want? Do they want, you know, rims on their netbooks everywhere?
The idea is you put the money back into the system. You create all of these academic free thinker types who are able to bring it back to the community. So I know it's a long-term investment, Shauna. I don't get it. I don't get it because
are there food service workers unionized?
I don't get it because a lot of these people aren't even getting degrees that are meaningful. They're not actually helping the economy at all with your liberal arts degree. I'm sorry.
And to the point of like, oh, you got a liberal arts degree, not to get all, you know, taking it personally and all that. But the kids are told, you know, I remember sitting in class in junior high at 13 years old, could not sign a contract, could not buy a beer, could not do anything that adults can do. Like any contract that I made at 13 was null and void. And I am getting sales pitch after sales pitch after sales pitch because I'm in junior high, not because I was in the gifted classes or anything, about how if you go to college, you know, practically a hockey stick graph of how better off you will be in life mm-hmm. if you go to college and you graduate. Yep. And they said, doesn't matter what you major in.
Doesn't matter how much debt you
accrue. As long as you get the degree, you will pay down your debts. But debts are kind of the same as grants. You just have to pay them back. That was how they put it. That's not how I understand it now. That's not how I understood it when I took the debt on and all that. And compared to most people, I have very little debt, even when I got out of college. But the kids who go to college and the parents who encourage their children to go to college are lied to.
It's a myth. It's an absolute myth. Unless you're going to be a brain surgeon.
It is a sales pitch. And even if you're going to be a brain surgeon, you're probably not going to be a brain surgeon because that is very specialized. Mm-hmm. And I always hear people talk about, you know, their daughters are going to college. It's like, oh man, college is a scam. No, she's going to do this and that. She's a real thing. And it's like, oh, that's nice. You know, so many history majors that I knew, I majored in history. I graduated with a degree in history. So many history majors, fellow students I knew, started out as chemical engineering, mechanical engineering majors, they couldn't hack it. And, you know, it's not a knock on them. They were, you know, really good students in the classes. They, you know, got better grades than I did. But I mean, it is a total scam. And your article is illustrating that a lot better than I am.
So they're always complaining about how the schools aren't getting enough money.
They need money.
This gentleman, his name was Morin. What's his first name?
Robert Morin.
Robert Morin. He passed just recently. He was a librarian or a library tech type at the school at UNH. He left the school $4 million. I don't know what I'm more surprised that he gave it all to the school or that he had $4 million. And look at him. He's just, he's decently dressed, but he's not, you know. The fact that he just had $4 million sitting somewhere.
Well, it says at the end of this that he didn't spend his money. He didn't go out.
Yep. Which makes sense if, you know, a librarian type. I don't go out and I'm kind of in the same boat. But I'm not going to look like that, by the way.
Well, you're also not going to give $4 million to a college. Any college.
College communities throughout the nation have been buzzing about Robert Morin, a librarian at the University of New Hampshire, who recently left the school his entire estate of $4 million when he passed away.
Morin's That's not true.
Selfless they... act is both generous and moving. He graduated from University of New Hampshire in 1963 and went on to work in the school's Diamond Library for almost half a century.
That is not true. The community college throughout the nation have not been buzzing. They've been salivating.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Oh, this guy has money. Oh, I wonder who can give us money for free.
Here's where the man messed up. Great, great gift, but here's where he messed up. Morin set aside $100,000 specifically for the library to fund scholarships for work-study students, support staff, and renovate one of the library's multimedia rooms. The rest of the money was apparently designated for funding scholarships and renovations. So how exactly has UNH chosen to spend this wonderful man's gift? $2.5 million will be spent on developing a better career center for students and alumni. As a wildcat, I visited the campus. All right, by the way, this is by Claire Cortese. She's over at the Odyssey Online.
So she's an alumna.
Yes, alumna. But a whopping $1 million is being used to buy a fancy new video scoreboard for the new football stadium. The remaining $400,000 doesn't seem to have a designation yet. So they just did. They just redid their stadium, and I believe that it was money that was donated and given from previous alumni. But they.
It's not important. What's important is what they're doing with this poor man. He worked in the library for 50 years. He. Thank God he designated something specifically in his will to the library. He actually had that much in his head to be like, okay, well, you have to give at least that. They'll probably do more. And, you know, I mean, even if all of it was said you have to spend it on the library, there's no guarantee that they wouldn't have just redone the library to look like, you know, a piece of junk as well, because it's the new architecture or whatever. So...
Well,
it's shameful, and honestly, it's hard to. It's what you do when you don't have any kids at the end of your life. You just leave it to the school.
In recent times, they've also put money into some projects that are raising a lot of questions, concerns. Like, for example, this $17,000 light up table. They also redid their pool. $6.5 million went into their brand new outdoor pool in New Hampshire. Outdoor in New Hampshire, so you can use it for like 3 months.
But it's heated, so you can use it for a fourth month.
I don't understand
this table. Is it a sitting table?
It's a cafeteria table, I believe.
So people sit down and put their trays and take selfies of their food. And God.
And we've got to go. And this is I'm.
God.
Shauna.
It's a freaking table.
Yes.
It's a video scorecard. I mean, they were going to build it anyways. They're all whores.
I'm sorry that you believe that the state of New Hampshire is not giving enough to higher education. This is what happens when you give more money. They are going to find a way to raise tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be picked up by the taxpayers and the students and the parents. Or they're going to spend it on things like football, because that's what actually makes money for the school, which is very sad that that's all they really care about.
And you know what's happened?
Getting people degrees.
You know what's happened in the past? The pre-civil rights era civil rights leader, Booker T. Washington, he was a slave. He taught at, I think it was Hampton College. He at least studied at Hampton College, but he founded the Tuskegee Institute. And he has a chapter in his autobiography, Up From Slavery, where he describes having to build the buildings with the students, and they had to make bricks without straw. And, you know, he even noticed when he was a kid, when he was younger and he was initially a teacher, that he would go into homes and he'd see these people in just the utterly horrible living conditions, but they were studying French. And it's like, you need to learn how to tend the fields because you need to live and be productive, but you're studying French. And it's the same, like, when people say we need money to pay for stuff, it's like, it's possible to learn without money.
Next episode, more on the Tuskegee.
Tuskegee.
I can never say it, Tuskegee. Dealing with the poor and the needy. And you've been watching Citizen Kane. Head over to the website, citizenkane.org. All of the archives are there, all four of them, all previous videos and the show notes. Stay up to date by liking us on Facebook. You can send me emails, show@citizenkane.org or on the Facebook. If you would like to leave a message, call that number down there, 267-521-2771. If you call during the week, I'm probably not going to pick up.
We will just wonder what the phone ringing is, and then it'll stop.
But
if you're watching it on Cheshire TV, don't call in.
Well, unless you want to leave a message. You can do that.
Oh.
And if it's a good message, we might play it on the show. That's it for us. We'll see you next week, 9-8 Sundays. Good night.
It's 9-8 Sundays. What is that?
9-8 p.m.
9 o'clock?
Oh, did I say 9 o'clock?
Sorry. You said 9-8.
8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm working backwards. My clock is working backwards.
You don't want to forget the central affiliates.
Tuskegee.
It should be 5 o'clock Pacific time, so, you know, all the stations in L.A. can catch us.
So I noticed, so anyone in the chat, I noticed that these comments just don't update. I have to refresh the page to see these comments update. This is crap.
So you guys could talk smack about us and we're not going to see it. So go for it, man. Bitch and moan.
This is not good. I'm wondering if YouTube is a better option or just to set up an entirely, well, if I set up another chat, that's not, two more things someone has to do. So it's really easy to click on the video. But if they actually have to like log into a chat room.
No, I don't know. How interactive do people in the chat expect to be? Oh, because it's a chat.
It's...
Yeah.
I mean, it could... If there are enough people who log in, and it, you know, it could turn into something where people are stumbling all over themselves. And by the way, I can't see how many people are in there on this. I mean, this video is not even loading up.
Well, because you're not playing it, and you stopped being alive, right?
Something... People are stumbling all over themselves. And by the way, I can't see how many people are in there.
Oh, this is tripping me out. Stop it. Mute it.
Can't find the mute button.
Nobody.
I mean, this video is not even loaded. There it is.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe it is live.
By the way, Nicholas caught that, too. That was great.
What? Like, does it sound like it's bullcrap?
No, it sounds powerful.
Well, it is, because I freaking am, man.
I am the
much as I don't want to be, or as much as I'd like to be like, screw Keen, I'm leaving. You know, your charming ass has me here.
Thanks.
You know, it's the actions. It's not the ideology. It's, you know, I'm freaking here. I got a job. I have a really good job.
Is it real?
It's a real good job. I like it a lot.
Oh, well, you should have talked about that.
I got nothing to say.
For
it's
all
a good
you folk
job.
Out there, Shauna has just changed jobs. 3 weeks ago?
Two weeks ago. It's really good. They even asked me.
She was in a dump, and I was hearing that all the time, and I was just like, hearing the stories about the, hold on, I think I have a drop
for
They
were the same stories over
here's
and over.
Here's one of the stories.
Look at all those chickens.
And I was like, oh, I can only handle this so many times. So she switched, and she got in trouble because her boss didn't, like, go through the entire
rigmarole. No, there was no trouble. Everything was great. Everything was wonderful. And they even asked me at the
end. Considering it's still good to go.
I am a horrible person to train because I can grasp stuff really quickly. And a lot of other people take forever because it's really dumb. And I'm not saying there's anything bad with being dumb. So I get really impatient. And I'm also a bad person. So... You know, it's a nightmare. I can feel the vibe of, like, what is this F&B's problem? But, no, they even asked, you know, they asked me at the end of the week, like, so what do you think of the culture of the place? And I'm like, it's wonderful. And what I could point to it being wonderful is that people work.
It makes a big difference.
Even when I notice that, like, there's some people, like, yakking away... And just bitching and moaning. It's still like, well, my work isn't all group work, so I kind of don't care if they're yakking away. And they eventually do get, I don't even know if they're getting the work done or not. I mean, for all I know, you know, they are. It's great. I give it a year till I get super depressed again.
And by the way, there is also that to consider that when you start a new job, you...
Because you're learning.
You're in it, and you're learning, and you
don't
you're not
know.
Concentrating on the crap that's going on around you.
Yeah.
All right. Chat room, thank you for chatting.
Kitty.
The couple of you. Is there a kitty here now?
Kitty's been sitting here the whole time.
It's getting warm in here.
It is.
We will see you next week. Good night.